Funding for Think comes from SMU's Certificate Program in Financial Planning.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. If you imagine life for an overweight, bookish middle school girl burdened by vapid Hollywood parents, taunting schoolmates, and an unrelenting crush on her mentally unstable adopted brother, could hell really be so much worse? In Chuck Palahniuk's new novel, Damned, heroine Madison Spencer finds herself dead of what she believes must have been a marijuana overdose. She is trapped forever in her still-pudgy, flat-chested body and sensible loafers, and assigned to work as a hell-based telemarketing operator who will spend eternity interrupting people's dinner with inane surveys. And what she really wants is the attention of Satan himself. Chuck Palahniuk is in town for an address to Arts and Letters Live tonight at the Dallas Museum of Art. Chuck, welcome to Think.
Oh, Chris, I wish I could have stated it half as beautifully as you just did. What a tough act to follow.
Oh, that's very kind. Well, you begin with the line, "Are you there, Satan? It's me, Madison," which becomes a refrain through the book, is obviously a reference to the Judy Blume classic, "Are you there, God? It's me, Margaret." Had you read the book as a kid?
No, not as a kid, because I was a boy kid. And boy kids just...
It's kind of subversive for boys to read it.
Didn't read that one, nope. Mm-hmm. But in a way... I wanted to write a book for secular humanists that would resonate against the Left Behind series of books.
Yeah.
Because secular humanists don't have that kind of, you know, book about theology, about theological fantasy. And so I wanted to go in that direction, but for kind of Democrats.
And it's interesting because Madison's parents have told her there is no hell. It's all, even sin is all sort of relative. And then it turns out Madison is in hell, and her parents were entirely wrong. You can go to hell for something as simple as honking your horn too often.
Or being a redhead.
Yeah.
All redheads go to hell. Hey, I didn't decide that. It's there. Right, because that is kind of the hedge that among all of my friends that nobody wants to come right out and be an atheist because they're all afraid that they're going to be wrong, that there will be a hell, that there is a God. So, you know, that is everyone's worst fear in the circles I travel.
So it's like a really watered-down version of Pascal's wager, though, because these people aren't necessarily living religious lives.
You got more sleep than I did last night. This is so not fair. I've been trying to remember Pascal's wager for weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
So talk about this. Through this journey, she meets this precocious 15-year-old who sort of interprets for us the ways that humankind has looked at hell over time, including the fact that a lot of the sort of demons that populate the hell that you've created here were one-time minor gods who've been demoted by evolving understandings of theology.
Right, and that each succeeding civilization demonizes the sacred deities of the previous civilization. And so those people like has-been celebrities on reality television, a kind of cast into hell where they're just in a terrible mood because they once had it all and now they're really held in low regard.
So what kind of reading did you do? It sounds like you did read a lot of theology and a lot of history preparing for this. Is it typical for you to do sort of academic research before you go into a book?
Always. And one of the most fascinating things researching this book was researching Halloween. And the way Halloween used to function until really within the last few decades was Halloween was a night when all scores were settled.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody had really slighted you during the year, then you went out on Halloween night and you burned their barn or you killed their dog or you slashed their tires. Terrible, terrible damage happened on Halloween. And it really wasn't until the 1920s and 30s that communities came together, civic leaders, with candy companies and the media, and decided, let's offer candy to people to placate them on Halloween. And that's how the Halloween that we know evolved from this hideous night of revenge, which is still kind of demonstrated in cities like Detroit, where you have a devil's night.
What a strange way to sort of take something that we've been doing for thousands of years and try to make it more palatable.
But it still bears the vestiges of this strange event that it used to be, that it really is the powerless people in our culture, the children, dressing up in the guises of outcasts, whether they're animals or dead spirits or they're cowboys or they're hobos or they're pirates. They're really marginalized non-humans. And then they go door to door demanding tribute from the people who do hold power and offering a kind of ritualistic threat, you know, the trick-or-treat statement. So in a way, it's watered down, but it still is that. It still contains all the elements of the old Halloween.
So your hell is littered with not only the detritus of our mortal bodies and, you know, hair and blood and excrement, but also really bad candy like root beer barrels and circus peanuts. Where did that come from?
Well, candy is the currency of hell. Mm-hmm. And so if you want to get anything done, if you want to place a bribe, if you want a better job in hell, then you have to offer up a certain amount of a certain kind of candy. And the way you make your fortune is that on Halloween evening, from dusk until midnight, all the occupants of hell return to Earth in their original identities, and they're able to kind of harvest candy until midnight. And that's really their earnings that they have to live on for the coming year.
What did it take to get into the head of a 13-year-old girl and sort of have her voice emerge on the page?
I wanted the character, Madison Spencer, I wanted her to be kind of a pre-gender, pre-sexual person, mm-hmm. because there is vaguely that person I remember before puberty who really, really had it together, mm-hmm. who was smart and funny and clever and confident like we are never again confident in our lives. And we have so many fantastic abilities until we hit puberty, and we're just devastated. We're just completely betrayed by our bodies. So I wanted Madison to be that person, man or woman, boy or girl, at the peak of that confidence and ability, you know, dreading that betrayal of puberty.
I don't want to, you know, get too far into this, but it's almost like Adam and Eve before the fall. You know, mm-hmm. they were doing great before their eyes were open.
And that's why hell for Madison is composed of these enormous amounts of discarded bodily things, fingernail clippings and blood and bile and loose hair, all of these things of the body, these corporeal things.
So did you crafted this specifically as her hell?
Very much, but in a way it's my hell, because when you travel on book tour, a lot of the big hotels set aside what they call an author's suite. Mm-hmm. You go into these author's suite, and typically you don't know who's slept in that bed, and you really don't want to know. But in the author's suite is a whole wall of books, hundreds, thousands of books. And they're all signed and they're all dated by the authors who have slept in that bed. And so when you go through the room like I do on your hands and knees, and you find the loose hairs and the and the scabs, and you pull back the bed sheets and the mattress pad, and you see those stains, you know that, you know, there is David Sedaris, and there is Paula Deen, and there is Jane Fonda, and there is Clive Cussler, and that all the thoughts of all those people on the wall are present in all of these little stains and whatever little things you find in the room.
So it's not nearly so glamorous as it might sound to stay in one of these places.
No, you know.
Are you thinking that somebody does this after you, that goes in and says, there's Chuck Palahniuk?
No, because the room is fantastically clean after me. They're not going to find anything.
So this idea that there might be a hell, and wouldn't that be terrifying? Where do you think we sort of lost for the segment of the population that feels like it is sort of past religion? Where did we lose this connection with the thing that we're so afraid of, almost as a matter of wiring?
I'm not sure. I really am not sure where that broke down, whether we just discarded religion altogether, and that was discarded with religion. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the many meta-narratives that we have discarded over the last 100 years, that we really have no big overarching stories that unite us. And so my guess was just that religion, like so many things, have been discarded, and hell just went out with religion.
Yeah, in a way, I mean, certain belief systems don't work without a punishment system. You know, if you're going to believe that you get the glory, then people who fail at that have to be believed to go somewhere else.
Well, and in doing the research, it was fascinating to see how other cultures had interpreted hell. Mm-hmm. And for most other ancient cultures, hell wasn't a place of punishment, of pain and suffering. It was a place that you went to just sit it out. It was like a recovery center you would go to dry out from alcohol addiction. Mm-hmm. Hell was kind of that place you went to recover from being addicted to being you, to get over what it was like to be you, to let go of all of your attachments, to forget your accomplishments, to forget all of your offenses. It was a place to go to forgive and forget and to be kind of cleansed before you could pass on to paradise.
And so Christianity, in adding hell, needed this thing that we think of as purgatory.
You know, that's the book I'm working on now. Because Doomed...
It's a trilogy, right?
Right, exactly. It's Damned is the first book. It's all based on the Divine Comedy, Dante's. And then Purgatory is the second book, and Heaven will be the third book.
So we can hope good things for Madison in the years to come.
Good things for everyone, because Madison really becomes a representative of all humanity.
Chuck Palahniuk is with us. His newest novel is called Damned. He's in town for an address to Arts and Letters Live tonight at the Dallas Museum of Art. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call in now to 1-800-933-5372. You can also send email to think@kera.org. I am joined now by Jeff Whittington, senior producer of Think, host of Anything You Ever Wanted to Know. And Jeff, we have sort of an unprecedented goal for the 2 hours of Think today.
Yes, we do. It's a $20,000 goal, Chris. So your call right now to 888-694-6931. Your online contribution right now at kera.org will help us get there. Again, it's $10,000 in the first hour, $10,000 in the second hour. And if we make those mini goals, we stay on track to end the drive we're still shooting for tomorrow afternoon.
Your contribution can make this possible at 1-888-694-6931. You can also go online to kera.org. We do have copies available of Chuck Palahniuk's new book, Damned. Of course, you know him previously as the author of Fight Club and Choke and Invisible Monsters and a host of other books. This is the newest one, and it is available as a thank you gift at or above the $120 level.
Yeah, if you want to get a copy of the book and support KERA at the same time, that's a great way to do it. It's just $10 a month when you join as a sustaining member of the station. So please follow the lead of Jan, Paul, and Esther Costers and Frisco, David and Catherine Stolarski and Alan. We also heard, and thanks go to Diana Ayala and Rockwall, Linda Kerr in Waxahachie, Lauren Monaro and Natasha Crespo in Dallas, and Terry Greenberg in Dallas. They've called 888-694-6931 or contributed at kera.org. And we've already made some progress, Chris. Just $9,630 left to raise in this hour. Again, to meet the $10,000 goal for each hour of Think Today, to stay on track, keep the station healthy, and end the drive sooner.
If you come in with a contribution of 10 or 20 bucks a month, that takes us really a great step forward. And you will not be alone. You'll be joined by all the other people who love the show, who listen to Think, who come to it every day. Often you may not have heard the promos. You may not have gone on the website. You don't know what you're going to get in hour one and in hour two. But you know that we're going to bring you people who are at the top of their game professionally, who have interesting things to talk about and to explore on the air. And you know that you have the opportunity to interact via email and also over the phone with many of our guests, which is a really wonderful thing and something that not every local NPR station is able to offer.
That's right. It is your call-in show produced right here in Dallas-Fort Worth for you. And of course, we have listeners all over the world and all over the country. And some of those folks contribute as well. But really, it's up to you to support your public radio station. There are many others, but this one is yours. And this is your show. We do the show every single day. We plan and ask guests to join us because we know you want to talk to and hear from these folks on the show. So please support it right now. If you've considered a larger gift, you know, a $1,500 friends contribution or even a $3,000 or $5,000 contribution today, would really help out. We're in that countdown mode. We'd still like to end the drive tomorrow, but to do that, to stay on track, we've got to raise $10,000 each hour of Think today. So call 888-694-6931 or do it online.
Remember, you have the chance to get a copy of Chuck Palahniuk's new book, Damned, as your thank you gift when you make a contribution at or above the $120 level. You can do that on the phone at 888-694-6931 or online at kera.org, where you can also check out other thank you gifts, ways to pay, and set up that sustaining membership or pay via credit or debit card. We'll be back with Chuck Palahniuk in just a minute.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Certificate Program in Financial Planning. You can gain a professional advantage with SMU's 9-month intensive CFP program starting in Plano this January. Learn more at smu.edu/plano-cfp.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is author Chuck Palahniuk. His newest novel is called Damned. He's in town for an address to Arts and Letters Live tonight at the Dallas Museum of Art. If you'd like to join this conversation, we do have a line open at 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think at kera.org. This is a really interesting thing that I learned reading this, perhaps you learned through your research, that in the Catholic Church, the concept of saints may have arisen from the notion that former pagans were reluctant to give up their sort of minor gods.
Right, that they wouldn't move from a polytheism to a monotheism without having a very specific entity that they could identify with, that they could petition. And so early on it was decided, let's give them these kind of secondary religious figures so that they can relate this saint to this previous god.
Hmm. And in hell, we have what are today maybe our secular saints. There's a lot of celebrities down there.
There are a lot of rumored celebrities. Uh-huh. You know, Madison, when she's telemarketing, she realizes that really the only people who are going to stay on a really long telemarketing call are people who are, for the most part, very ill or very mm-hmm. old, people who are really facing their mortality or are desperate for a connection. And so she begins to pitch them and kind of comfort them with the idea that they are going to die and that it's likely they will end up in hell. And so she starts to tell them what celebrities they're going to meet and how exciting it's going to be and make sure they look her up so that she can show them the ropes. And she really does end up coaching and nurturing these very frightened people through their deaths.
It's really interesting because you have this, you know, this child in hell. And yet we get the sense that she's quite a moral person. She seems to care about these scared people on the other end of the phone, even though she's trying to lure them into hell with her. She's saying it's not so bad and you'll be okay down here.
In a way, it's because she's such an innocent. She really denies the drama of being in hell. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're a kid and you see vomit or you see blood, you're kind of thrilled by it. It occurs as what it occurs as. It doesn't occur with this enormous kind of story built into it. So Madison is seeing hell through the eyes of a child who is just thrilled to be there, just thrilled to be somewhere where something exciting is happening.
Hmm. Yeah, and in some ways, she has more autonomy than she ever had when she was alive.
Right, and she's not being treated, carried by people who have always known her. Mm-hmm. She's given the freedom to reinvent herself to strangers.
Talk a little bit about her relationship with her parents, because they, I mean, it appears that they love her, but they love her sort of in the way that you love a really cute, you know, Lhasa Apso. She's sort of their tool to sort of parade out in front of people, and then they don't quite know what to do with her.
In a way, Madison expresses something that I've heard a number of people talk about, and that's a resentment or a rage that younger people feel against baby boomers right now, mm-hmm. because baby boomers, you know, really were out to change the world, to improve the world, and the world that we've got now is seemingly not that much better. And so there's a sense from younger people of this really fantastic anger against baby boomers, their parents, their grandparents. And I wanted Madison to express that. On another level, not to give away too much of this, but Madison is very resentful of these refugee children that her celebrity parents adopt as part of these publicity stunts. Mm-hmm. And in doing so, it takes attention. It takes love away from Madison. In the same way that when Satan was an angel in heaven, he was God's favorite angel. He was the most beautiful angel. Mm-hmm. And then God, everything was great. They were a big, intact heavenly family, until God decided to make man. And that's when Satan started to have sibling rivalry and really resented man. And that's what led to Satan's fall. So in a way that Madison had the sibling rivalry against her adopted siblings, Satan had very much the same thing. And it's on this level that the two of them can kind of bond.
And then in turn, when she is down in hell and separated from her parents, she's really clamoring for Satan's attention. She's writing him these letters. She's trying to relate to him and get him to notice her.
Well, because in a way, you know, she's lost contact with her parents. Obviously, God doesn't like her, or why would she be in hell? Mm-hmm. She's lost track of all of her fitness coaches and teachers and all the authority figures that she's spent her life trying to please. The only person left, you know, that she can please is Satan.
So it comes up over and over, Chuck, that she is overweight. Is she really overweight, or is this something that, you know, based on her Hollywood parents, she just feels like she doesn't measure up?
You know, I don't think she's that overweight. Mm-hmm. She might be a little bit, the way, you know, a lot of kids are at the age of 11, 12, 13.
Mm-hmm.
But her mother has gone on record in Vanity Fair magazine talking about the tragedy of my daughter's childhood obesity so many times that Madison just can't escape that.
And then I think one of the funniest scenes in the book, ironically, is the one of her funeral, where she's this celebrity child. All these people that it sounds like she'd never met come out to publicly mourn her death. And they were people who didn't appear to care very much for her or about her when she was alive.
That's that famous Tom Sawyer scene, mm-hmm. where you're able to attend your own funeral and see people express how they actually felt about you that they couldn't express while you were alive. But Madison finds that people are just as phony about you when you're dead as they were when you were alive.
It's funny that you said the word phony there, because one of the things I wrote down as I was reading the book was there's a little bit of Holden Caulfield in her too, I thought.
Yeah. You know, in a way, you know, getting to that archetype, Pippi Longstocking, the character Margaret from Dennis the Menace, Pollyanna, these very pre-gender child characters that are so smart. Jane Eyre. Jane Eyre was very much one of these characters for most of that book. You know, writing this character.
And that's the only place while she's alive that Madison really finds much solace is in her books. She retreats to that when she can't relate to her rude classmates and her parents and other people around her.
Right. That's kind of the grim backstory of writing this book is my mother was diagnosed with lung cancer. And for the year 2008, I lived with her and took care of her and got her to treatment. And during that year, as she got sicker and sicker, she decided to reread all of her favorite books. Mm. So all of the books that Madison loves were books that my mother reread. Daphne du Maurier, the Brontes, the Jane Austen books. And at the same time, she was taking painkillers. So she was sometimes giddy and telling me these very funny stories about her childhood. And she was presenting me the character of Madison Spencer.
It makes a lot of sense the way this turns out then, because the book is unquestionably very funny and very snarky in some spots. There's obviously some serious ideas behind it. It would seem to be an odd thing to come out of such a traumatic experience for you, and yet there's a lot of absurdity that goes along with shepherding someone through the end of their life.
There is, and part of that was being in my mother's very quiet house with that oxygen machine.
Mm-hmm.
And her going in and out of consciousness. And when a telemarketer would call, I would be so thrilled to be talking to another human being that I would take the call and I would talk about chewing gum or paper clips or cotton swabs. I would talk about anything for as long as I could just to be talking to another person and in a way to escape this quiet death house.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go to Tom in Arlington. Hello, Tom.
Hi, Chuck. I attended Clarion West Writers Workshop in 2009, which unfortunately was the year after you taught there.
I'm teaching there next year, so come back.
Maybe I should. Maybe I need a second try. But to the community there, to the SF community, you are still a speculative fiction writer. So how are you influenced by that SF community around Seattle? And then how are you able to cross over into mainstream publishing and sort of becoming one of the, I guess, founders of the transgressive genre?
You know, there's no way I could be a founder of Transgressive because that goes back so far. The Monkey Wrench Gang and Trainspotting and American Psycho, that goes back decades. I got in kind of at the very tail end, just before 9/11, kind of in the last gasp of transgressive fiction. And in regard to sci-fi, I think that what I do is just, I've never really chosen a genre. I never chose literary fiction. I never chose horror. I never chose comedy. I just tried to write a book that I would enjoy. And in a way, that's why I'm a little hard to shelve in bookstores.
Do you find the writing process agonizing, like some people describe it? Do you find it really easy? Is it some combination thereof?
Enormously easy.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's like sex. that if it hurts, you're doing it wrong.
Mm-hmm. So when you structure your time, do you begin, did you know at the start of this that this was the first of a trilogy?
I did, because at the time I started writing it while my mother was sick, I realized that since my father had been shot and killed in 99, mm-hmm. that with her death, I would have no parents. And I was going to have to express that in some way. And instead of writing some tedious book about a middle-aged man mourning his dead parents, why not invert the situation and write a funny book about a small child who is dead herself, and she can still mourn her parents, but they're alive on Earth. She can still miss them and grieve them and feel longing and resentment and anger and rage and love and all those things that I feel. But it would be expressed in this kind of comic reversal. And that's a much more fun book to write.
It is interesting, though, that somehow we don't think that, you know, you get into your 40s and you do have that sense, I'm an orphan, which, of course, you know, it's different when you're an adult. And yet we don't really give adults quite the same latitude to grieve for their parents that we would for a child.
We don't, because, you know, once you're grown up, you're not supposed to, you know,
to need them.
Exactly, to need them and to express those feelings as openly. And that was another problem with having given up religion. My family kind of left the Catholic Church in the 1970s, is suddenly I had a dead body and I didn't know what to do with it.
Yeah, how do you mark the occasion?
Right, exactly. What are the steps of mourning and resolving? And so my siblings and I came together, and in a way we had to make do. We had to cobble together some ritual. But that's a problem with having left religion.
Chuck Palahniuk is my guest. We're talking this hour about his newest novel, Damned. He's in town for an address to Arts and Letters Live tonight at the Dallas Museum of Art. If you would like to join the conversation, we do have a line open at 1-800-933-5372. Just hang on. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. You can also send email to think@kera.org. If you would like to support KERA, and we are doing a really unusual challenge today, and your support is really necessary right now to keep us on track to end the drive as scheduled this week, we would love to hear from you with a contribution at 1-888-694-6931 or kera.org. To make this hour's goal of $10,000, we have a little over $8,500 left to raise. That's plenty of time for as many of you who are out there listening, who are daily listeners to this show, who believe in the values of public radio and in having time for an extended discussion as opposed to a soundbite version of things. That is plenty of time for you to get on the line at kera.org or 1-888-694-6931 and make your contribution. If you are interested in reading Chuck Palahniuk's new book, we do have copies available as thank you gifts, so you can help KERA at the same time that you acquire your copy of this highly rated new novel. You just call 1-888-694-6931, announce that you want to support the station at or above the $120 level, or you go online to kera.org. There are support buttons all over the website at this point, so you won't have any trouble finding one. You can also, on the website, check out all the other thank you gifts. So if there's something else that we have talked about over the membership campaign this time around, and you think, oh, I wanted the This American Life thumb drive or something, we still have all those available if you are prepared to make your contribution. Jeff Whittington is back now. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. Was it $8,510 left to raise this hour? So that means in that last break, which was at this point about 20 minutes ago, we heard from a number of you. We're, I'm sure, gathering those names, and we want to thank you in advance for having gotten on board with the station. That means we've raised about $1,500 this hour. That's great. That's great. But we still need to raise $8,500 to stay on track for this hour's mini goal of $10,000. That also keeps us on track to end the drive. Remember, we're going to give back 4 days. Membership campaign free, 4 days of programming if we stay on track. And, you know, your call right now, 888-694-6931. Your online contribution right now at kera.org makes it possible. I want to thank Don and Brenda Dobbs and Keller. Thank you so much. Thanks to Alan and Marcia Abison in Fort Worth and Edward Fannin in Dallas. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Also want to thank Ginny Holscher in Fort Worth and William Helmuth in Decatur. Thanks so much, Richard and Tina Cardenas in Coppell. And also thank you to Lisa Atkinson in Fort Worth and Yvonne Graham in Fort Worth. Thank you, Mark Miller in Saginaw. Utah, and Dana LaChance or LaChance in Fort Worth. We do know sometimes there's a little bit of lag time in terms of us getting your names and us getting down your contribution amount. I'm guessing we are now dipping below that $8,500 amount left to raise this hour. But your contribution now really helps. And frankly, it also inspires other people, because when people hear we get really close to the bottom, that's for some of you, that's when you decide to pick up the phone. So right now, we would really appreciate hearing from you online at kera.org or at 1-888-694-6931.
And don't forget, we have copies of Chuck Palahniuk's book, Damned, available when you join the station with a $120 membership contribution. Of course, you know, you can get the book elsewhere. The book's available, I'm sure, tonight at his signing and his talk at Arts and Letters Live at the Dallas Museum of Art. It's out. It's been well reviewed, and it's out there. But we're just trying to, you know, entice you with just a little something else to say thanks for your contribution to your public radio station. Look, you know that many people listen to this public radio station because we tell you. And maybe that makes it easy for you to say, oh, well, someone else is going to call. Someone else is going to contribute online. But what if nobody else does? That's why it's so important that you do your part, whether it's $120 contribution, which is $10 a month, or maybe you would consider joining as a friend of KERA. A friend's level contribution is $1,500 a year, but it's just $125 a month when you become a sustaining friend. You know if that's right for your budget, and I would say that there are probably a number of you listening right now that, who it is right for. So call right now, 888-694-6931. Join the station or do it online at kera.org. And we just got another update, Chris.
Yes, we are at $7,935 left to raise in this hour. Your contribution will bring us that much closer. You know, I always say this, Jeff. If you are a friends-level member of, say, the cable company or the phone company or any of those utilities, consider that they may not say as much about what you value in life as public radio, and consider a membership to this station to keep it strong and vibrant in your community. We're here right now because someone came before you and made a contribution. Do the same thing for yourself and for others in the community right now.
A whole nother segment coming up with Chuck Palahniuk, and your call, 888-694-6931. Your contribution online at KERA.org. That's what makes it possible. $7,840 left to raise in this hour to reach our $10,000 mini goal. We've got to make that goal to stay on track to end the drive sooner. Please do your part.
If you make your reading list based on what you hear on this show, we really need to hear from you now at KERA.org or 888-694-6931.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Certificate Program in Financial Planning. You can gain a professional advantage with SMU's 9-month intensive CFP program starting in Plano this January. Learn more at smu.edu/plano-cfp.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is author Chuck Palahniuk. His newest book is called Damned, and he's in town for an address tonight to Arts and Letters Live at the Dallas Museum of Art. If you want to be part of this conversation, we have lines open at 1-800-933-5372. You can also send email to think@kera.org, and that's where we hear from Dave, who wants to know why Madison's death was from marijuana.
You know, that's a misdirection that eventually, in the second act of the book, Madison fully remembers how she died. Marijuana was just kind of a red herring up front. So, don't want to give that away, but it's not marijuana.
It's another interesting thing about her parents, who are just, you know, like if you wrote a list of the worst possible qualities for people raising a child, they have most of them. But they encourage her to experiment, and they buy her drugs, and they encourage her to get tattoos and things like that.
You know, because they've really based their entire identity on rebellion, on that kind of 60s negation and rebellion and tearing down of everything, of all the meta narratives. And so they really don't know anything but that. And all they can kind of encourage her to do is to tear things down and to misbehave and to take drugs, because it's all really they've ever known themselves.
Mm-hmm. And at the same time that they are sort of encouraging her and paving the way for her to engage in this teenage rebellion, publicly they refer to her as an 8-year-old, and they don't really want the idea to get out there. That is that about their age, and they don't want to seem old that they have a daughter this old?
Exactly, because her mother is an actress, is a very famous movie actress, and she doesn't want to be seen perceived by the public as being older than she absolutely has to be.
The other really funny hypocrisy about her parents is that they they show up at red carpet events in their little Prius, and then they drive, they fly their Learjet all around the world whenever they feel like going somewhere.
I know. There's a lot of hypocrisy in the amount of energy that is kind of burned up by people preaching for the environment, and I wanted to play with that as much as possible.
So you have references in the book to Jonathan Swift and Jean-Paul Sartre and the films of John Hughes. I'm curious about what specifically you read or looked at for the first time as you approached this book, besides the Judy Blume works.
You know, I really see this book and the two subsequent books about hell and purgatory and heaven, I see it as a form of travel writing. Mm-hmm. And so I looked at unconventional travel writing like Dante's Inferno and Jonathan Swift's Gulliver's Travels is travel writing. And Charles Darwin's Voyage of the Beagle, again, travel writing. You know, each of those is basically Anthony Bourdain going someplace dirty and eating something disgusting. And so I wanted to pattern these books after those unconventional forms of travel writing. And all of those forms use that same preamble form, where it does start with a little summary of what we will see in the subsequent chapter.
Maybe I am just a member of my own generation, but I have to tell you, I was a little disappointed to see Charles Darwin in hell. Somehow I didn't want him to be there.
Charles Darwin is huge in purgatory in the next book. He's a major, major player.
So that must be fun to take someone who was a real person in history and do what you like with him.
Well, and that's what Dante had done in the Inferno. At the time, you know, he'd placed a lot of his contemporary, you know, people that he disliked, he reported seeing them in hell. And so it was very scandalous the way he sort of literally placed people in hell undergoing these hideous, you know, torments.
It's funny that there seems to be at least as much art and literature about hell as about heaven. And you'd think that as human beings who like comfort and ease, that we would prefer to fantasize about the good stuff.
You know, in a way, we can identify with hell because we perceive of it as a very physical thing where we're bodily suffering. We're experiencing something of the body. And on the other hand, my publisher was terrified of how I would treat heaven because of Dante's three books, the Paradiso is considered the weakest because once you get to heaven, there is nothing to happiness, eternal blissful happiness. There's no story there. And so no one reads that book. And I had to promise my publisher that my heaven would be just as interesting and exciting as my hell.
Well, given that Madison in hell is not entirely dissatisfied based on the way her life was already, I wonder if you know, we all discover, we think we know what we want, and we don't.
We don't, or we can't ask for it. There's just so many elements.
Are we made to be unhappy most of the time?
Dead radio air.
Is it a bad question, dead radio air, or are you thinking about it, dead radio air?
I'm thinking about it, dead radio air. You know, just we, I think, are addicted to conflict. And I loved writing Fight Club, and people loved reading Fight Club because we love conflict, and we just cannot embrace the fact that we enjoy conflict on a lot of different levels and that we'll never have total peace because we love conflict.
Are people who have only known you from that work surprised when they meet you and your demeanor is very understated and thoughtful? Are people surprised that some of the ideas and the scenes in that book could come from someone like you?
I think they are surprised if we meet just glancingly, but my background, my degree, my student debt was in journalism. And so really my job was to listen to other people's stories and to kind of take these ongoing field surveys about what people are worried about and about how people conceive of things like heaven and hell and to kind of quilt them together to look for common themes between big groups of people. And as a child, I wanted to be a priest, which is basically the same thing, listening to people's stories and looking for common themes. So in a way, you know, I'm a very boring person that collects the best stories from very exciting people.
So part of the goal of wanting to be a priest is to bring people comfort. Do you feel like you're able to do that now through writing?
You know, I wasn't so much into the comfort part. I just wanted to hear their dirty secrets. That's why I'm not a priest.
You wanted to be in the confession booth.
Yeah. So now I'm a writer instead.
Was it upsetting to you when your family left the church? Was that something that you know, if that was not your decision but theirs, did that feel strange?
You know, we were so young. The only thing I was really aware of was that we were sent to church every Sunday with my grandmother, so that my parents could have sex in other rooms of the house.
Is this just your guess, or did you learn this first?
No. And that's what I loved about Sundays. We would come home from church, and Mom and Dad would be like a honeymoon couple. They would be so in love and so amorous with each other that you knew that they'd done it pretty much in every room. And I loved that aspect of Sundays. It started boring, but it was the most blissful, happy day in our family of the week.
Do you think your grandmother knew?
Boy, I'm sure she did. You know, she's a human being. Uh-huh. She didn't stick around. She just dropped us off. But, yeah, what the heck?
What about now? Do you believe in heaven and hell in any kind of traditional sense?
You know, I don't give it a lot of thought. I just try to live a really good life, as good a life as I can conceive of, but not be so focused on something beyond the moment. You know, I don't want to waste the right now worrying about the next thing.
So it's about being good for its own sake, if there is such a thing.
Being good, being engaged, being present with people, enjoying my life.
What do you read in between researching?
I read a lot of short stories. I love short stories because they're a little machine that if they do their job, they do it beautifully and they do it quickly. And I read a lot of nonfiction, a lot of sociology, anthropology, history.
And there will be a short story tonight, is that right?
A short story called Romance, which is the sweetest little love story I've ever written. It was published in the August Playboy. They've already made a movie from it. The movie's in post-production being edited right now.
Oh, we'll look forward to seeing that and to reading the story. But the story is not, it's available in Playboy, but it's not out in a book or a collection anywhere.
No. Playboy published it early, generally. But the tour story isn't published until after tour. This year they got ahead of me.
Chuck Palahniuk, thank you so much for spending this hour with us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Chris.
The new book is called Damned, and Chuck Palahniuk will be addressing Arts and Letters live tonight at the Dallas Museum of Art. I want to thank all of you who have been with us as listeners, as emailers, as phone participants to the show this hour. We also want to thank those of you who are helping us to meet our goal. For the 2 hours of Think Today, we are hoping to raise a total of $20,000. Your contribution gets us that much closer. And we also, we have an update. We're at $7,840 left to raise in this hour. You can help us do this, and you can help us do it and also receive a copy of Chuck Palahniuk's new book, Damned. It is available at or above the $120 contribution level, $10 a month on the sustaining membership plan. I've always thought it was a great idea. I finally actually converted this drive around. Actually, I converted my membership, and it is great because you can make a substantial contribution to the station and really not have your budget affected very much. So go online now. Do that at kera.org or call in to 1-888-694-6931. Jeff Whittington is back with us. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. $7,570 left to go in this hour. Okay, that's been updated now. $7,270. $7,270 left to raise in this hour. And, you know, we take short breaks during the show because we want to bring you as much conversation as possible, especially when we have a guest like Chuck Palahniuk in studio. Of course, he's famous for writing Fight Club. His new book, Damned, is available today when you join the station. Just $10 a month, become a sustaining member. Call 888-694-6931. Say, I want that Damned book. or go online and look for the Damned book at kera.org. You can't miss it. It's got a picture of Satan right on the cover. So it's available when you join the station today with a $10 a month contribution level sustaining membership, or $120 all at once, or give a little more because 7,000 $1,270 left to raise in the next 6 minutes to stay on track for our goal this hour and to stay on track to ending the drive 4 days earlier than normal.
You do this because you love public radio. So many of you tell us that you are absolutely addicted to the station. Many of you never miss the show, either live or during the replay in the evenings, or perhaps you catch the podcast. Your support makes it possible to have a locally produced talk show. There are costs involved with making this show that your support helps to defray. There are costs involved with bringing in the national programming that you value on this station. We would do it for free if we could, but it's not free to us. We have expenses to pay. We have salaries to pay. We have we have to keep the lights on in the building and maintain equipment. Your dollars are the reason we're able to provide this service. 1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number, or you can go to KERA.org. It really isn't such a big deal. If you keep thinking, I don't know, I don't want to get around to it, once you do it, it's done and you forget about it, you know? Then you feel great for a year.
Yeah, we know because people who've given have told us that you, on average, listen for a number of years before you finally give. And, you know, that's just the way it is. It seems like it's free. And then as you get familiar with the station, you get familiar with how it works. You know, you've been listening during this drive. You've been listening probably, like I said, for years. You know how the funding model works. You know we're waiting to hear from you. And the resistance for years and years building it. It just takes so much effort. It seems like it's so much easier just to, okay, I'll give. 888-694-6931. Okay, I like that Chuck Palahniuk guy. I'll give $120 online at KERA.org, and I'll get that book.
It is easy to give. You know, Jeff, I was thinking, it's a little bit about, you know, you and I are approaching that age. You get to a certain age and there are certain sort of medical checkup things that you have to do. You're older than I am. Medical checkup things that you have to do that you might think.
I'm faster, though.
You are faster.
That's right.
You might think, I don't want to do that. And then once you do, it's done. And you feel better and you just know you should have been doing it all along. Don't put it off. Just make a contribution. I'm realizing that the metaphor that I've just drawn is probably not appealing to people. But this is much, much easier to do than having a variety of different preventive medical procedures.
Now, Chris, you read the book.
I did. I enjoyed it very much.
And now, where are the non-pledgers in Chuck Palahniuk's hell? Did he mention people who don't give to public radio?
No, but they belong there. Well, actually, 100% of 100% of like taxi cab drivers, politicians, and journalists end up in hell.
Wow. Well, see, so we're all
vision.
Doomed. We're all doomed anyway. But it's your opportunity today to help your station. If that's the one good thing you do today or this week or this year, you know what? Check it off. 888-694-6931, online at KERA.org. Of course, we know you do great things every day because our audience, the audience that listens to this public radio station, is one of the best, smartest, greatest, best-looking, most athletic audiences that public radio
Shiny's
stations.
Hair.
That's right, in the world. And actually, we do really do have one of the best audiences in the public radio
realm.
Yeah,
that's sincere.
It's absolutely the truth. Our guests tell us all the time, oh my gosh, your callers have the greatest questions. People listen all over the country. People who move here say, it's so much better than the station I was listening to before. Well, if you've had that experience, why not call? 888-694-6931. Chris, under $7,000 left to raise. A few more minutes. We know, especially if some of you will give what I like to call a leadership gift, a larger gift, maybe $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000. If you've been thinking about making a gift at that level, this would be a really great time to do it, to help the station stay healthy. Number two, stay on track to end the drive 4 days early. We're going to give you 4 days back from the membership campaign, and of course, to make the goal during Think Today.
What better investment for your philanthropic dollars than a service that you yourself use? You're not only doing this for someone else that will benefit, but this is also something that you use. We want to say thank you so much to Ramiro Naglas and Carmen Montoya in Plano. Thank you, Vanda Ungerino, excuse me for saying that wrong, Vonda. I'm quite sure I did. Thank you, Christopher and Maria Walker in Richardson and Ellen Yancey in Dallas.
I also want to thank Christina and Raymond Jones in Keller, Christine in Dallas, Carolyn and Timothy Taylor in Rio Vista, and Keith Carney in Dallas. Thank you so much to each of you. Again, just $6,995 left to raise in this hour to stay on track with our mini goal. Our goal, $20,000 for the whole Think Show today, $10,000 an hour. We'll roll this onto the next hour so that we can try to stay on track, because we want to give you the opportunity to win this membership campaign. We want to give you the opportunity to support the station that you already listen to. It just takes a couple of minutes. It's as affordable as you want it to be. And don't forget, you can get Chuck Palahniuk's book, Damned, when you join the station. Just $10 a month as a sustaining member. Call 888-694-6931. When else are you going to get to call your public radio station and say, I want that damned book?
You can say it other times, but you might not receive it.
And you can really mean it.
1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number, or go to kera.org. $6,995 left to raise. Your contribution does make a difference, because it takes us to that lower amount. And if everyone who's listening makes a contribution now, we'll get there in no time. Thank you so much for your support.
The Think production team includes engineer Nilufer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.